Love this podcast? Support this show through the supporter feature from Acast. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Okay. Ready. Welcome to Ambridge on the Couch, an in-depth look at the Archers with me, Harriet Carmichael, Lucy V. Freeman and Matt Rodriguez Payne. Now, before we make a start on your emails,
let's... And Jeff Thomas, you've missed him off completely now.
Because you know, it wasn't deliberate.
It's the because I hadn't altered the bloody script. Sorry, Jeff. Sorry, Jeff.
It's because I swapped my name for Jeff's, but that meant Jeff didn't get a shout out at all. It's really hard to remember what to say when you're actually just reading a script, you know? I'm going to just try and do it from memory next time.
Oh, God. Okay.
Oh, anything could happen, Lucy. Crazy times.
If I start to sound odd throughout this podcast, by the way, it's because I've put a face pack on just before we started. So it's gradually... I'd never used it before, so I wasn't quite...
Oh, no.
So my face has gone quite hot and quite tight, so I'm not quite sure what's going to happen.
I know what's going to happen. It's going to be like that fish feet all over again. Do you remember?
Like, oh, God, yes.
Didn't you do the podcast with your feet in a fishbowl?
No, we imagined that I did, but I didn't. Oh. But I was using that stuff, wasn't I, that you put on your feet and then your feet fall off, basically.
God, that still makes me feel sick. So now your face is about to fall off mid-podcast.
Yes.
You should do a before and after, though. Do a before, and we can put it on a reel. Let's do a reel.
God, no.
Do a before reel. Oh, no, you've got it on now anyway. You can't take it off, Kent. Can you take it off and put it back on again?
No, I can't.
Is it one of those laser ones where you lie on the bed with like a robot mask on?
Yes, I'm doing that, obviously, on a bed with a robot mask on while recording a podcast.
You sound incredible. You know, like what Victoria Beckham does, it looks really scary. It looks like those masks that people wore in World War One when they came back.
Yeah, and you got like bloody injuries. Blade Runner. It's just ridiculous.
But apparently it works.
Apparently.
I think I had it done once when I had a facial and they did laser.
Laser resurfacing.
Something. Mm. And it was horrible. And she didn't tell me that the lights were going to change colour. And it went from green to bright red. So I instantly thought something terrible was happening. I just went and shot up. And all the stuff fell off. And there was like... stuff, and she started screaming because she didn't know what happened. It was so scary. Oh, it's like in an eye test where you get those, you know, when you see the capillaries or whatever they're called. Oh, I hate that. I just hate seeing things in my eyes.
Do you know what that's called?
What?
Do you realise we haven't even done the introduction yet? Anyway, that's called, I think this is right, Purkinje's tree. And the man that discovered it was an optician. Called Purkinje, something like that. And
what, when you see the branches?
Yeah, the branches out of your capillaries are called Purkinje's tree.
Oh, well done. I don't like it. I don't like Purkinje's trees, and I never want to see them again, thanks. Because it's scary, don't you think? You're seeing inside of yourself, which is not right.
Yeah. Yes. No, it is called Purkinje's tree. I was writing.
Of you.
Purkinje's tree.
Oh, right. Well done. Yes. Sounds like it's a good name. Good name. Mm.
It's an image of the retinal blood vessels in one's own eye, first described by Purkinje in 1823.
Wow. What nationality is that, actually, Purkinje? sounded
like the National Theatre of Brent then. What nationality is that, actually?
Who is it, actually? what is
Desmond.
It, though? I don't...
Who is it, actually, Desmond?
It is being French.
Yeah. Prague. Prague.
Oh,
Czech.
Of course.
Yeah, of course.
I forgot my Pragian names.
Yeah.
Son of Pekinsk.
Yeah. Oh God, don't start that again. See, that was an ill-advised stab. We actually turned out all right, wasn't it?
Actually, really very interesting, Lucy.
We knew what we were talking about.
Yeah. And also, I can't remember why we were even talking. Oh, because you've got your face mask on.
I've got my face mask on, and you were telling me that you didn't like having...
I didn't like going into the red on my eyes.
Yes.
And... which is interesting, Lucy, because we were actually talking about how dangerous going into the red is on our levels.
Yes.
So.
Yes.
It's all links.
So when you say interesting, I think that's a bit of a reach, but anyway.
It's fine, we can just cut all this out.
Okay, yeah, all right.
Now, before we make a start on your emails, let's have a recap on what happened this week in Ambridge.
We began the week with Tony flat on his arse in a muddy field. Oliver came trotting into the dairy, apologising profusely for selling the land to the Titcheners, for not buying any cheese, then for selling the land at all. Too late, Oliver. You've unleashed the Titchener on the next generation and buying a wadge of sterling gold is too little too late. So... Trent has apparently gone from the Orangery, but Connor has arrived, which apparently means Chelsea has to suck up to him like a Hoover, as the Orangery is her living until the hairdressing takes off. As by now, she has done the hair of absolutely everyone in the village, sometimes whether they want her to or not. I would suggest that she either isn't very good at it or she's not charging enough. There is literally no one left. There's no one left at Lower Loxley either, as they're all leaving to go to Gay Grables, where everything is new and shiny, and they will be surrounded by those pictures you buy as a job lot at IKEA, usually featuring jetties going into a lake, instead of the tight-lipped portraiture of 100 Pargeters. Lily is using Chelsea as a double agent, which is a risky move, as Chelsea's got a gob on her like a barn door. Elizabeth is control, presumably sitting in a grimy grey cardigan in her office, muttering, "There are three of them and Alaline." It turned out that Lily was actually after a job herself, but was still horrified at the idea of anyone else leaving. I'll give you a little employee motivation tip, though, Lily. Probably don't laugh heartily when one of them suggests they'd enjoy going to the gym, then seemingly offer them a hand job in the car if they stay. Poor old Brad left there at a jog trot. So, the new buyer of the Grundy land has turned out to be Jack, which is surprising and required Helen to do her gritty wobble voice. I am a little confused about Helen's outrage. Why would Rob leave £500,000 to a child that wasn't his? But anyway... She made the frankly insane decision to tell Henry that his brother was a trust fund half-millionaire and he wasn't, on the grounds that she didn't want any more secrets. For crying out loud, Helen, that was one of the ones it would have been a good idea to shut up about. Henry seemed, as it turned out, less cross about the money and more cross about the fact that he didn't have a dad. Or he did, but he was probably Norwegian and spent a lot of time getting busy with a little plastic pot. However, they finally listened to us. The entire Bridge Farm Archers have gone into therapy. Henry started therapy at school. Helen started therapy in Borchester. Almost immediately, one therapist put in for a raise and the other went off sick with stress. Sharpen those pencils and invest in a lot of A4 writing pads, chaps. You're going to need them. Natasha has started talking to Tom as if he's a slightly dim-witted colleague who's been promoted above his abilities and she's trying to work out how he got there. Unfortunately, he doesn't really help himself by saying things like, "That's Titchener land," like he's Wild Bill Hickok rather than a man who can't sweep up under a high chair without having a nervous breakdown. Natasha is unwilling to give up on the purchase of the Grange farmland, and to be honest, now she knows the new landlord is 5, she could probably get it by giving him a Chupa Chups lolly and a Spider-Man t-shirt. Natasha is unfortunately a celebration hijacker, one of those people who announce they're having a baby in the middle of the vows at someone else's wedding. Anyway, it backfired spectacularly with Pat in the middle of cutting the cake when Tony wrestled the knife off her and went after Tom, closely followed by Helen. Paul seems to have regressed since his mother has joined the veterinary practice, but to be fair, Denise seems to have regressed also. Last time I checked, "I'm not doing it and you can't make me" is not a constructive way to address one's line manager, even if you are going to be nobbing him in a fortnight. After a lot of squabbling, they managed to find and sell Lillian one bag of dog food between them. Well done, you two. You're a boon. Hinge and Bracket, whatever they're called, would be delighted with your sales figures, I'm sure. Denise is doing a dance fit class and Alistair went along to it too. Alistair was a bit shy about going as he claimed he had two left feet. But in my experience, ooh, you were right.
No, there's, sorry, it was just a delivery.
Oh, it sounded like you'd fallen over.
I'd left.
Thought you'd fallen off your chair. Alistair was a bit shy about going as he claimed he had two left feet. But in my experience, dance fit mostly consists of the fit people who don't need to be there looking at themselves in the mirror and everyone else sniggering at the back and farting gently every time they bend over or peeing themselves a bit when the music starts to get a bit quick. And finally, we ended the week with more gritty wobble Helen. This time it was her threatening to leave the endless cycle of fear, blame, apology and victimhood that keeps Bridge Farm the jolly place it is. For once, I was right behind her. That lot will turn anything into grist for their particular mills, and Titchener handed them enough grist for a lifetime. Get out, Helen. You can leave Henry, as he seems sound, but clear off yourself. Leave them all to their cold comfort farm, doom, gloom, something nasty in the woodsheds and squabbling. Head for the sunlit uplands of Weatherfield. Ta-ra, Chuck. The end.
Oh, I was so happy that Natasha came up with that plan.
I know.
Pretending it was a nice thing to do.
And
honestly, Tom, it's so selfless of us.
I think we should probably be up for a CBE or some sort of community award.
Pride of Britain is what we're doing.
But I was thinking, when he was going, should we do it? When she was going, should we do it now, Tom? I was thinking, no, if you have to keep asking somebody if you're going to do it now, that means they don't want to do it. So don't do it.
Oh, but also I just loved the fact she was, because she cannot, she's such an attention seeker, isn't she? Without, you know, she desperately wants to be the hero.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I've actually felt really sorry for her. I would have been affronted. I actually thought it was a really good idea.
Well, it was, apart from, A, it's nothing to do with her, again. You know, this isn't her sister. But this isn't, I know, but there are boundaries with in-laws, and you don't just go wading into, especially a family that bloody complex.
Of course not. But again, spineless Tom, who should have just gone, honestly, if we're going to talk about it, should we just, let's leave it.
But she's a runaway train, isn't she? When she puts it into gear, everyone's just has to leap into the hedges because, you know.
And I just love the fact that she presents everything as, I'm a good person.
Yeah.
When, of course, everything is done with a motive to make herself more financially stable.
But poor Helen, though, I did feel sorry for her, where she kept going, could I just...
Right, fine, I'm off then. Bye. And then they were like...
you can't leave. I saw something nasty in the woodshed. You can't leave.
Most families would, I think, probably go, I think that's actually a really good idea. Change of scene, you know.
Most families, if they were nice, would go, do you know what? Yeah, sorry.
Yes.
We'll all wind down necks in because this isn't actually our battle. It's yours. They're your children. You're a grown up. You're in charge. If you need our help, we're here. Otherwise, we'll back off. Instead of making everything... Every flipping family get together they have turns into a sort of parish council meeting with everybody thinking that they've got a valid reason to go wading in to what is not
they
their
can't
business.
Help themselves. But then also it was all, I think, blown way out of proportion anyway.
Mm.
I feel like telling Henry was definitely the most stupid thing to do. He is 13.
Well, she said tonight, it's not happening for 14 years. And I thought, and yet you decided to tell him already.
Exactly. Who knows what will happen in 14 years?
They could have sold the whole farm, split the proceeds, and Henry could get his half a mil, whatever.
Exactly. Or Henry's real biological dad comes looking for, you know, one of his 5,000 million children. And he happens to be a multi-billionaire. You know, it's you just don't, it's just not worth it. I actually have a friend who has a similar situation with her boys, in that the eldest boy, because very sadly his mum died when he was a baby, and so he inherited pretty much everything, and that was a lot. And she brought that son up, and so he's her son, but then she has two other sons, and they won't be inheriting, you know, this fortune. But it's just not a big deal in their family.
Yeah,
it's like, isn't he lucky? This is so wonderful.
Yeah,
and what we can do now is we can, you know, we can support the other two It's just so I think the difference is
you in that situation that you can relate it to the you can
and also it happened before the other kids were born.
Yeah, and also yeah. he loved his mother and didn't.
Yes, didn't. Yes, exactly.
You know, he lost his mother. The scant compensation is that his inheritance.
Yes, that's very true.
But when you have a parent that was vile,
yes,
then
it comes with baggage.
Yeah, yeah.
But then in that case, Jack inherits the land, they sell the land, give all that money to Refuge.
Yeah.
You know, like make something incredible out of it.
Yeah.
But of course, you know, it's easier for other people to say, isn't it? But ultimately, don't do anything now and don't just ignore it if you can. Because at the moment... Miles has it in trust, but that doesn't mean that you have to have any interaction with him, presumably, at the moment.
Mm. No.
So whatever. Anyway, it was a very good I really liked the twist.
Yeah.
And I loved the fact that Natasha was rubbing her hands with glee all about it.
Tom, I've had enough. Oh, this is Laurie Jones has opinions, as we know, about Natasha. She said, "So nasty Natasha wants to see the upside of Rob's bequest to Jack. We might be able to do something with the property. Oh, Natasha, you Machiavellian toe rag, there is no we. You are married to the owner's uncle. That does not make a we. And all the phony nice kissing up to Helen won't change the fact that Helen is not the trustee. If you want to go hit on Miles, maybe that's your avenue for getting control of the property until Jack's old enough to inherit and boot your backside all the way back to where it was for cheating on his naive idiot Uncle Tom with his woebegone dunderhead Uncle Miles. She is a nasty piece of work. And although Harriet adores her, I'm certain that the other Laurie will agree with me." Ooh. We've got a brace of Lorries joining up now.
They've gone head to head, those Lorries. She just brings me joy every time she does a scheming number on the Archers. Or anyone else for that matter.
You're never quite sure with her whether she's kidding herself though.
But that's the thing, because she obviously is so completely genuine when she's being sympathetic with Helen, but she just can't help. She is, but that's why I love Natasha. She thinks she is a genuinely good-hearted, generous person, and in a way she is. But that tiny bit of her just can't help but naturally manufacture it into something that would also work out well.
And
for
you
her.
Know, funnily enough,
yes, we could make ourselves multimillionaires by doing this, but.
It's not about that. It's not about that.
Did you think Mr. E was creepy? I didn't think he was creepy, but then when he said, when Henry said, "Oh, I'd rather talk to you than a counsellor," and he said, and it just the scene finished with, "That's fine, Henry. That's fine," or something like that. I automatically I just went, "Oh no, God, don't."
Oh God, I wish you hadn't said that. I was really happy that poor little Henry had someone to talk to.
But what, then why did they even mention the fact that he could go to a counsellor if he wanted to?
Because I think it was about Henry just needing a place to be able to talk to somebody, you know.
Or, well, my other thought was probably Mr. Ede and Helen are going to end up together. Because Mr. Ede sounded like Lee a bit, I thought.
Yeah, I think he was just. Well, he hasn't announced it on Twitter, has he, that he's playing Mr. Ede? So he's clearly not going to be around for a long time.
Okay, so I'm reading way too much.
I think possibly on this occasion you are.
I really panicked. You can't help. That's what's so sad, isn't it? When there's a male teacher in a room with a young boy, your alarm bells start ringing, don't they? If it's a drama, I mean, of course, you know.
And also one really daft thing, and that was when he said, "I've got some tissues in here somewhere." If you are the school, sort of, if you're involved with school in any sort of pastoral sense, you have a box of tissues absolutely all over the place because they just come in and weep. That's what they do.
Or to part mop up blood.
What about, yeah. Bandages.
Okay, so he's not creepy, that's good.
Well, I don't know, because now I've said that, I feel like I've tempted fate,
I don't think they would do that to Henry, would they?
No, I think
he's been through enough.
Yes.
Bless him.
Joanne Lynn said, I find it sort of hilarious how utterly horrified everyone was at the thought of a middle-aged grown woman moving away from mummy and daddy. And good luck to her in finding a new job. I can't imagine there are a lot of places looking to hire someone whose main skills are rearranging bottles, stirring cheese and bossing people around in a vaguely snobby sort of way. But you never know.
Yes, what are your skills? I'm really good at cheese. I'm so good at cheese. Yes, but this is a job interview for the insert name of hedge fund. but I'm really good at cheese. Well, maybe Helen could go and work at Great Gables. I think...
Well, Twitter said, oh, Helen and Ardil are going to go off together.
No, but Lily was disappointed when she found out that Ardil wasn't... And that was... They had a bit of chemistry once.
Yeah, they did. When they did the... They were in the play, weren't they?
That can't be right, because Ardil is definitely staying around. Because his sister is now the GP, so...
Yeah.
It can't be that he's leaving.
No. We're going to have a bit of a... I can sense a sort of a reshuffle.
Oh, you know...
Coming.
Do you think because they...
Oh, he's going to take over from Roy.
Yeah, maybe.
Oh, shit.
Oh, it's really sad. I got really sad when I heard Roy mentioned this week, actually. I know, you know, of course.
It's horrible because they mentioned Roy and they mentioned Robert Snell in the same.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. When he said, oh, I'm going to give the room to the Royal Garden Suite to Linda. He just said Linda. He didn't say to Linda and Robert. And I thought, where's Robert? Why have they not mentioned Robert? And then thought, no, calm down. It's horrible. It's horrible because you're just waiting for it to...
Yeah. Maybe that's... But because I thought Lily was actually only applying for the internship because, to do some more spying in...
Spying.
Gay Gables. But of course you'd go and work there. Clearly, Lower Loxley is just an... awful place to work, isn't it?
Yep.
Clearly, no one is giving you any positive feedback in that place.
Yeah.
They expect you to work for, you know, probably free overtime. You're in, you know, dirty surroundings.
I've just sent you a sketch for next week and it is about exactly that.
Oh, God, of course it is. I wonder why you'd sent it tonight. Oh, God, Lucy's been inspired by something.
It's keen.
Oh, I see. Oh, I see.
It's not this week's, it's next week's.
And Lizzie's just such a cold bitch, isn't she? Just, well, I mean, obviously I couldn't have paid her anything else anyway, so yeah, good luck to her. Yeah. I mean, come on.
And
there
also,
are other ways to retain staff.
Yeah. And also, Lily, she, bloody hell.
Oh, God.
I've never heard anybody so, but she really needs her come up. She really needs comeuppance from somewhere because she is so patronising and such a snob.
Yeah. But
when he said, well, they've got a gym, and she goes, oh, why would you want that? Oh, because you're so fit.
No, but it was really funny when she offered him a lift and he was like, oh, no, I'm out of here.
No, it's all right. I'll take my chances in the rain. Thank you.
Would you like a lift? I love it when she plays. That is her absolute.
Yeah. And maybe bet. I can persuade you on the way. That was the bit that made me go, whoa.
She's so good at exactly, Brad. Brad was like deer in the headlights. And he'll be imagining what could have happened all night.
Mia, we've got to talk. I think she fancied me. I've got to resign.
In my head, I didn't. It was just a suggestion of... But I love Lily when she plays that because she's so good at playing manipulative cow, isn't she?
Yeah. And I love the way that she sometimes goes incredibly posh.
Yeah, she
as
does,
well.
Yeah.
She suddenly goes all drawly.
And pursed sort of lips and everything.
Yes. Even more than Alice.
Yeah.
Well, apparently we were completely wrong about tree surgeons.
Oh, because
we said last week...
Don't tell me that. No, I don't think I said anything about tree surgeons.
No, you said we haven't had one in the Archers before.
Oh, I did.
Jamie Perks became a tree surgeon.
Did he?
Yes. Jonathan in Berlin has told us that. And James Everett has said Mike would do forestry work when not doing the bottling and the milk round. As he got older, he employed Jamie to help him out. Jamie then did an apprenticeship in tree surgery.
Does James only know that because he's been going through every single archive episode?
And he also said, however, as they're both gone, I guess there is room now for a power tree surgeon couple.
Yeah, exactly. No one's had really good equipment before.
He also says, Jamesy Everett.
Sorry, can I just quickly ask, was Jamie Perks a silent character? I don't think he was. Was he?
No.
He was a voice. Yes. Okay. Yeah.
Because he was vile to what's her name? Who? His mother.
Oh, Kathy.
Kathy. Yeah, he was vile to her for in his teenage years.
Jamie. I remember she always used to sort of say his name with a sigh, didn't she? Jamie. Anyway, yeah.
Mad also says that this is not the first time that the Bull has hosted a fashion show.
Oh.
I don't know, but he doesn't tell us.
When was the last one?
He doesn't tell us. He is sneaky, sneaky.
Fashion shows should just always be put on at colleges / student events.
Yes.
You don't need grown people doing fashion shows.
No.
Grown, normal people doing as in
very, very
people.
Skinny people. Skinny little people with no boobs and no hips, and that's what you want.
But also what it is, I think, is they're always put on because the person organising it wants to go down the catwalk and show off their body.
Yes.
That is the only reason people come up with the idea of fashion shows.
Yeah.
A la Kate Middleton at St. Andrews.
Yeah.
It's just for people who look really good to look even better. I remember when we did one at college and I was sort of roped into doing it. But the only reason it was put on was because the three girls organising it were so fit. And they were like wearing the transparent stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And because all the boys sit around and look up their skirts, don't they? So it's just that's what it's for and nothing else. And don't pretend it's for a good cause, because it never is. Thank you. Not that I'm scarred by it.
I was going to say that felt quite raw, Harriet. Quite raw.
Yeah. I didn't enjoy that experience very much. Thank you, because I'm a very short person. My legs aren't very long. And I didn't get clapped as much as the tall girls.
Did you have to trot down the catwalk?
To keep up. Wait, I'm here too. Hello. Ooh. Bit chilly in this. No, I just wore a baggy jumper. Anyway, sorry about that.
This is from Basil Clement, who says, over the years, there have been many moving and sad scenes in The Archers. These have usually involved adults. However, this Wednesday's conversation between Henry and Mr. Reed was almost unbearably sad.
Oh, Mr. Reed, thank you.
Neither his views on Jack's inheritance nor his anger about the absence of a father figure particularly moved me, but his fear, loneliness and resentment at having to be the man of the house, as he put it, were quite awful to hear. Being a 13-year-old boy has more than enough stresses and strains as it is, without adding the terrible idea that he not only has to shoulder a grown man's burden, but must carry it alone. I do hope that the writers will give him an easier time in due course. I must also pay tribute to the performance of young Blake Darby. It really was a fine piece of acting. I agree.
Is that his name, Henry?
Yeah.
He's very, very good.
He's very good. He's not at all cringy.
No, that's what's so great about him. He's very natural, isn't he?
But you couldn't really have somebody in that role who was.
No.
You'd have to be, you know, they must have really hunted around to find him because he's just excellent.
He's an ace bit of casting. Mm. And I'm really sorry to have even suggested that there might be something sinister going on.
Well, you never know because, we've all.
Yep, you never know. But I do think they will give Henry an easy ride. Mm. And it'll be interesting, won't it? Because he's such a good actor that you would have thought they want to keep him in and then he'll grow. But because he's 13. Yeah, I mean, his voice will break in a couple of years, won't he? And then he'll be adult Henry.
I wonder if she is going, Helen, because, they've got rid of Lee. And
it could be that she, she's such a big name now, isn't she?
Mm.
Ever since her, I think that ever since that Rob storyline, it must have really propelled her sort of her career and her.
Mm.
I hope she doesn't go. It'd be awful if she goes.
Mm.
She's not going to go. They don't go anywhere, Lucy. They don't.
The Bridge Farm lot.
She's not going. They can't. And if she's going anywhere, she'll just go to Felpersham.
Apart from Johnny, who's just sailing round and round and round the world because he doesn't want to come.
He'll be so happy he's kept out of all this, though, won't he?
Yeah. Now, do you remember, unfortunately, last week we were discussing horse fluffers?
Oh, yes, I do remember.
Yes.
Actually.
Well, Kate Lloyd-Jones has
is one.
No, she's not one. She said, your discussion about mares needing a fluffer to get them in the mood reminded me of the most unusual holiday job I heard about when I was at university. When stallions are in their full glory, so to speak, and it really is like a flipping full. Hose pipe, apparently they don't have very good directional control of their apparatus.
Yes, I've heard that.
Which for racehorses and stallions is their working tool and very valuable. Friend of a friend's job was to give them a bit of guidance to make sure they didn't damage their crown jewels.
Yes, I've heard that. I think I was talking about that with my sister-in-law when she was talking about the fluffer. And that's the thing, because they're so precious, those instruments, that they... yes, that they can't trust the stallion not to hurt its member.
Oh, God.
Yeah, so
she said, somehow
guidance.
I can't see anyone in the Archers taking that job.
I mean, Chris is very good with...
What are you doing there, Lillian? Horses. Oh, you know.
Alistair, darling. Oh, Jacob, could you just help me here, darling? Ooh,
up a bit, left a bit, to... left a bit, down a bit, and there we go.
That reminds me, the continuity. I listened to the Archers today at 2 p.m, so yesterday's episode, and the continuity guy, at the beginning, he went, but first... Paul's at the vet's and he's putting it all on display.
He probably was, to be honest.
Because he was, you know, Paul had been rearranging the shelves. Right? It made me tickle so much. Oh, they are brilliant sometimes, aren't they? The presenters.
It's when they're sarcastic and they say,
he's putting it all on display.
Fun times at Brookfield Farm, and you think it's a world of shit and it's not fun
friend.
At all.
They're yes, our friends.
They're our friends.
We love it.
No, it's gone. I had a brilliant.
So, well,
comment
we were talking
then.
About the stallions guiding.
Yes, that wasn't what I was
point of
say.
Direction, etc.
Yes, no, that wasn't what I was. I don't know. Anyway, now we also said. Had we ever heard Bert Horobin, blah, blah, blah. Because, you know, they were doing this whole thing about who's been going to the... And then we pointed out that Bert Horobin is actually a silent character. And Rob Williams says, Bert Horobin hasn't been heard for a while because the actor playing him died some time ago.
Oh.
This was mentioned by Susie Riddell. I can't remember the names or dates. Then he said, for some reason... Do you remember we were talking about Joy and Rochelle?
Yeah.
And that possibly Rochelle had died... or something bad had happened to her. And he mentioned this. Oh, it's not so horrible. There was, but various people were told to write a 6-word short story. And Ernest Hemingway wrote, "For sale, baby shoes never worn."
Oh,
and
oh, that's
so sad. I know. And he said it always makes me shudder. Also, he's worked out that being a bit of a maths bod, I worked out that Nigel's 3.5-second scream means he fell about 60 metres. That means that Lower Loxley must be about the same height as York Minster, or about 20 stories high. He said, please keep up with the ill-advised stabs. They are total nectar for people like me who like to show off. There will be another one along in a minute, Rob. Don't worry.
That is excellent, Archers.
Yes.
Knowledge though, isn't it?
Yeah.
How tall is Lower Loxley? And you can actually work it out. That's amazing.
A lot of people, because we've started a bit of a hair running talking about Joy and Rochelle and what the story might be. Mm-hmm. And Sally Kedge says, perhaps Joy accidentally caused some grave harm to Rochelle, Rochelle's partner or maybe child, so had to leave the Northeast, maybe a road accident or fire. Some sort of major incident, which has meant Rochelle wants nothing more to do with her mum, and that was very public, so Joy didn't feel she could stay in the area. I also wondered if there was a legal fraud case or something like that, or whether Joy had spent time in prison and was resettling herself in a new area. We'll have to see. She's becoming close to Helen, so I wonder if Helen will fall over the clues.
Was she a sub-postmistress?
Uh-oh. Do, do, do.
You get me?
Yep.
Because did you watch the post office?
No, but I've been following the story in Private Eye for the last 5 years. Everyone's going, how come we never knew about this? Private Eye were talking about it literally 5 years ago.
And BBC Sounds, and well, BBC, Whistledown, yeah. That excellent production company, did a really good podcast on it.
Yep. Panorama did a thing about it a year ago, but now it's had TV coverage. All the politicians are going, oh, yes, why didn't anyone tell us?
Because, yes. Because you can't engage as many people. You can't. The trouble is, yeah. It's not interesting to people unless you can see the stories.
Unless you can stick Toby Jones in it and that woman from Coronation Street.
But I have to say, you absolutely must watch it because it is so beautifully written. It's not, I mean, it's sensational because of the story, but it's so truthful, or it feels so truthful, and it's so beautifully acted. And honestly, I highly recommend it, although it's the first episode I found is so difficult to watch because it's so devastating. But you know, you stick with it. But Monica Dolan, who plays one of the main characters, who's a sub postmistress, there's a really heartbreaking thing because she's been convicted of fraud, where she was forced to say she was guilty of fraud, even though she wasn't. But anyway, so her conviction hadn't been overturned, so she has a criminal record, even though she's an innocent woman, and so she can't, and she wants to go and volunteer at her grandkids' school and do, you know, make crafts with them, and she's not allowed to. And there's this really moving scene where, you know, the teacher's like, you know, I'm so sorry, we'd love to have you, but you have a criminal record. Oh, no, it's so heartbreaking. And it made me think of Joy. You know, what if it's something, a miscarriage of justice, or something went terribly wrong, and now she's been estranged from the grandkids.
But then anyway, you'd think she'd be more bitter than she is, because the thing about Joy is that she seems remarkably... But I think she's somebody... I think Sally's getting close in that it's something that Joy can't forgive herself for, I think.
Right, yeah.
I don't think it's anything that she's been blamed for that she didn't do. It's something she did do and she can't ever forgive herself for.
Well, it'd be really interesting when we find out.
We better bloody find out. I hope they're not just going to spin this out
forever. I really want you to watch the Mr. Bates thing. I think you'll really enjoy it.
I know, but it'll make me cry, won't it?
It will make you cry, but,
well,
but
I don't
because
want
you...
to cry.
Because you know the end. You know?
It all turns out really bad in the end. Do you know one of the people, the compensation that one of the people has got is £15?
Oh, I mean, we're not here to talk about that, are we? But it just is. Well, I think as well what happened was, you know, when the Panorama was coming out and there was the podcast. So it was gaining momentum, wasn't it? The campaign against the post office. But then there was COVID. And then everything became about that, didn't it? So in a way, there were sort of 2 years where nothing else local or national was bothered about because the media was so focused on COVID and all the terrible tragedies and that have happened. So I think probably... you know, I think probably publicly it was gaining more awareness, wasn't it? But then we all forgot.
Well, everything just got derailed, didn't it, by COVID?
Yeah, it's awful.
Sally also says, by the way, that...
It's on ITVX, by the way.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yeah. Oh, you're just plugging the...
Close to my heart, yeah.
Plugging the family business, yeah. Sally Kedge says... that her mother, when she moved to New Zealand, her mother used to record the omnibus on a Sunday morning on a cassette and post out a bundle of tapes every few months to her in Auckland. And she's just found a carrier bag full of them. And she said, if anybody wants loads of cassette tapes from the Archers 2003 to 2004, let me know and I can arrange to send them on, she says.
Oh, that is... amazing.
But it's cassette, so I don't know what you would do with those, to be honest, but anyway,
you must be able to buy a tape player still, surely.
I don't know,
there must be I mean, an old Walkman you could buy, surely.
I played my children that scene from Wayne's World where they're all in the car headbanging to Queen.
Oh yeah,
and the children just sat there looking faintly puzzled, and then at the end they said, What did he put in the car to make that? And I was like, oh my God. How did he make the music come out?
Oh, it's so disappointing when that happens, though, isn't it? When you're like, guys, you're absolutely going to love this. This is incredible. This is going to blow your
just,
mind.
The takeaway was, you're really old and this makes no sense.
And I don't understand that piece of technology.
I've fixated on entirely the wrong part of this.
Yeah. Oh, that's nothing more gutting.
Yes. Lucy Traves also said, I wonder if Joy killed an abusive partner and has been to prison. If so, it would be lovely if Helen defended her against the Ambridge gossips.
I think that's too close to Helen's story, don't you?
Yeah. And Lucy also said that she is currently listening to an interview with Belgian politician Guy Verhofstadt, who sounds just like Febreze. Is Febreze Flemish? He's Eurovision, Lucy. You know that. Febreze actually listened to Guy Verhofstadt and said, nothing like me. I don't know what they're talking about. So, Ryushi Lindsay had a horrifying dream, which he has told us about. He makes podcasts and, well, content production. Yes, he's working in content production and he's working on a podcast about the unsolved murder of a family in Japan 20 years ago.
Oh, that sounds right up my street.
Yeah, me too. And he said that he dreamt that he was at the crime scene. I knew I could prevent the crime if I could just catch the killer. It was dark and foggy. I heard a squeaking sound, the turning pedals of a rusty old bicycle. I stuck an arm out and knocked the killer off his bike. I pushed up his bucket hat to get a good look at his face and discovered it was none other than Febreze Felbershop. Now, I have no idea what Jeff looks like. So I reckon it was the actual character who I accosted rather than Jeff as him. See attached image of the real-life killer's outfit, not very Febreze. The killer's identity is hitherto unknown, but perhaps I've stumbled across an important lead. Please say hello to Hannah and Amy for me. There we go. Hello, Hannah and Amy from Ryushi. But
what a lot of different worlds colliding.
Febreze is developing. It's people's attraction in everyone's subconscious, which is really peculiar.
And a bit scary.
But imagine, look, I mean, I've dreamt that I was with people from The Archers, characters from The Archers, but I didn't actually see them. I just knew that's who they were.
Although sometimes you do see them, but you can't visualise it. You know, like you see their face, but then you can't remember. You wouldn't be able to describe what they look like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ooh, that's really weird. Oh, but I really want to listen to that podcast now.
I know, it sounds...
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Michael Gorman says, there is something decidedly piskeen about the Titchener family purchasing those bloody 10 acres. If Deathbed Rob wanted to leave a legacy to his son, why not put the £500,000 into a trust? What is happening to the land for the next 16 to 17 years? Just lying there, earning no interest? Can Miles, another bad lot in my opinion, develop it? And what happens if he loses money? A will is a public document, and Helen could have found out about Jack's legacy any time, unless it is couched to something like £500,000 to be held in trust by my brother for the purpose agreed, in which case Miles could do anything he wanted with it. Perhaps it's just a plot to drive Helen madder. Yeah. And she's already planning to torture poor Henry by telling him about it for no good reason whatever. brackets, evil Titchener cackling off. Yes.
Yes, that is a good point. It would have done better, wouldn't it, in a stocks and shares thing?
I mean, yeah. I just assumed that they were going to build a house on it. But I suppose he doesn't have to, does he? He could just have 10 acres sitting there. But why?
Yeah. I mean, is there an argument that the land will... No, because it would still be worth more in the future. Or maybe it wouldn't be worth more in the future. But yeah, it's not going to be worth any more if you don't do anything to it, is it?
No.
I think maybe Kirsty will marry Miles and they'll rewild it. Oh, honestly, Helen, he's a good guy. He's got £500,000. I mean, sorry, that's a trust. He's he's a good guy.
Think how much tofu you can buy with £500,000.
I think Miles is definitely going to become a character for at least the short term.
Well, he's so good at sounding like Rob.
Yeah,
they can't waste that.
No, exactly, they can't waste
it. He must have taken it ages to get somebody who sounded so good at the voice. We've got to do it. We've got to use him for something. Got to. Carla Davitt is our January joiner.
Hooray! Congratulations.
But she said, I started listening to you in December. But that still counts. That still counts, Carla. We don't care.
Hooray!
She said, I started listening to The Archers the episode after Nigel fell off the roof, so it was nice to hear that audio on the podcast a couple of weeks ago. She said she has a newbie-ish question. How did it come about that Lillian's son James and Robert's daughter Leonie got together, were both brought up in Ambridge? I got the impression that Robert and Linda moved to Ambridge at a later stage. They did. They met. I think they met in Ambridge as adults, and then they met up again in London.
Yeah, because they used to appear in it every so often, didn't they?
Yeah.
James is played by my friend Roger.
Oh.
Yeah, and he used to be a reasonably regular character, didn't he? But I guess, I don't remember, I probably haven't been listening for that long, but I don't remember them ever living in Ambridge.
No, they didn't. And I think the romance happened, they both were
off
in London and came down to visit their respective parents in the village and then arranged to meet when they were back in London. So the romance happened in London, not we didn't hear it.
Yeah.
Yes. But they definitely, they weren't brought
up
in
Ambridge.
And
there was always quite a lot of tension, wasn't there, between Lillian and Linda.
Yeah.
And it was,
Carla's plot prediction is that once Robert has to very sadly die, Linda will be supported by Lillian, who will rope in Brian to help with something or other, and Linda and Brian will gravitate towards each other, as both are recently bereaved and a bit rubbish, without a steadying anchor of a partner. Kate will have finally had enough of spiritual home by then, thanks to recurrent break-ins and actual requirement of hard work, and started a new business offering Reiki and colour therapy to wealthy people's horses, using Jacob's connections. Brian and Linda will rebrand spiritual home as a llama sanctuary, offering llama walks to the general public and a lucrative income in llama wool blankets and cardigans.
Excellently well thought out.
You will fit in well here, Carla. Yes. Well done.
We like that.
Welcome to the family.
The detail is excellent. The twists.
Jeff's plot prediction is that Lillian and Brian will get together.
Well, that crossed my mind when they were having a fag outside the pub on New Year's Eve.
Mm.
But then I thought that's maybe a bit weird that Brian would... Well, also Lillian and Justin are back together. I think it might be more likely that Brian and Linda do get together. Mm. Well, I don't know. It crossed my mind because it felt like there was a tiny bit of chemistry, didn't it, when they were...
Yeah. We've just popped out to have a breath of fresh air.
Yeah. She'd drive him mad. I don't think he could put up with Lillian.
No.
And I think Linda's too good for Brian.
Yes. Yes. No, she has moral fibre, which she's sadly lacking.
But because I quite like the new Brian, who's seems quite sort of philosophical and a bit easier. You know, I guess more humble in a way, than less arrogant than when he was with Jenny. So I think it's nice hearing him being a friend, isn't
yes.
it, to people.
Yep.
I mean, there is always the him and Joy possibility as well, isn't there?
I just can't. No.
You didn't know?
No.
She's not very class appropriate.
That's exactly what I was going to say, but I was trying to avoid saying it. And then I didn't need to because you said it for me.
I didn't say it. Kate said it.
Now, we've had an email from Mary Anstey in Colorado. And she said she hemmed and hawed about writing to us because I was concerned my email might come across as alternatively angry, preachy or pathetic. But what she wanted to say was her beloved partner died in 2020. And she said that sometimes what we say or what listeners say reminds her of how little our culture understands about grief and loss. She said, we discussed Brian being out and about and more like himself again over the holidays. And she said, I heard a great deal of relief in your voices. This attitude is very much a product of our society. The world thinks grief is over relatively quickly and wants to believe mourners are back to normal because they don't know what to do with or how to react to sadness and other difficult emotions. I imagine Brian having a good cry and a stiff drink after both holidays because although he was out, he returned to an empty house without Jenny and he felt flat and sad. Second, sorry.
Oh, Lucy.
She said there was...
Oh, Lucy.
She said... There was a comment about listeners being fed up with Lizzie saying, this is my first birthday without Nigel. This is my first time to the grocery without Nigel. She said, I know none of us understand losing our person until it happens. But this is a huge part of the roller coaster. And I think she's dead right. And I think I felt really bad because I find it really hard to... I'm in a very selfish way. I'm like, oh good, they're back together again.
They're back
to normal. I don't have to worry about them anymore. Hooray!
No, of course.
Which is terrible.
No, but I'm exactly the same. I think that's a really good point about our culture is that we find grief so difficult to sort of, I don't know why, even if we've experienced it ourselves. You desperately need to know that the person is back to normal. Yes.
It's partly nervousness. Oh, yes. I'm going to put my foot in it if I say the wrong thing.
And no, but also we're not a very sentimental culture, are we? So we don't sort of go, you know what? If I was in your situation, I think I'd be feeling really shit. And, you know, even though it's 5 years on, this must be a really difficult day for you. But instead we just go, oh, you're looking so great. Oh, God. I love this positive attitude. No, I don't know. No, I just absolutely agree that is something. I am definitely... I remember when my mum died, my kids, after about a week of me crying all the time, were like, are you going to stop crying now? They just hated it. And I'm the same. It's just horrible when a person that you've been socializing with or hanging out with in a chain, it feels like they've changed because they're sad.
And also
all the
you
time.
Can't fix it.
No. And you're not experiencing the same emotions, so you feel as well like you can't get to their level because you can't be on their wavelength because they're so sad.
So there's
broken.
Distance between you.
Yeah, exactly. Mm. Yeah, like a terrible elephant in the room that, you know, you just stay quiet sort of thing, don't you? And wait till their grief has passed and then you can all party again.
Yeah.
It's really awful.
I think my personal theory, you know, when you go to Mediterranean countries or whatever.
The wailing.
Oh, and they get it all out.
Yes, Lucy. So with you there.
Yeah, it's all, and then it's all outside and it's not internalised. It's all out there. You've sobbed, you've thrown yourself on the thing, you've chucked flowers around, you've had a wake, you've declared that you're not going to leave the house again for a year, whatever it is. Yeah. And we
British
just,
funerals.
Well, as Victoria Wood said, it's just about you slice out, how many sandwiches you slice out scrape. That's the, and that's how we reduce it to... Yes. And everyone says, you'll feel better when the funeral's over. And it's because, God, it's a social event and I've got to get that right as well. And all of that just gets squished down. And then people start saying, do you feel better now the funeral is over? So you feel compelled to say yes. And then, and you never actually give yourself time to do that yelling and shouting and whatever.
But it is very difficult. I mean, A, I've already decided that at my funeral, someone has to stand up at the beginning. It can be you if you like. You begin at it.
Okay.
And you can pretend to cry a bit if you want. But okay. What you have to do is you have to go, at this funeral, I give you all permission to be loud and noisy and for your noses to snort. And you can cry loud and you can clap and you can cheer. But you have to let it out because at British funerals, you have to hold in the tears.
Yep.
And then everyone's going...
We all sound like pugs.
And everyone's making awkward noises because they don't want to disturb...
Yes.
The silence. Yeah.
Don't draw attention to yourself. Awful. Don't be dramatic. Don't be indulgent. And don't be over emotional.
Absolutely. Because if someone's sobbing away, they'll be like, oh my God, she's so indulgent. Like so self-indulgent. Thinks it's all about her.
Yeah.
Basically, if Natasha was there, she'd be like.
We're the only country in the world that regards self-control at a funeral as a good thing, don't we?
So funny, isn't it? But it's the norm. I guess because it's we do it because to be respectful, don't we? To the silence and the...
Yeah. And also, we've got that stupid Victorian thing about church. It's, you've got to be quiet. Yeah. You've got to be respectful.
It's awful. And you're not allowed to make a noise or run around. And, what were you saying about, before I interrupted you, about funerals? Can't remember. Yes,
I will stand up at your funeral and tell everyone that they've got to do Juliet Stevenson crying.
Yes.
In Truly Madly Deeply, with big trapezes of snot hanging out of their nose.
Mm. Massive snot. Yeah. Massive snot. And there's going to be tissues everywhere because nothing worse than when you're trying to use your sleeve. It's like a really good jacket or something. But also I'm going to have really like music intended to make you cry, like an advert type music.
Samuel Barber's Adagio for strings. I went.
Cry, you're out. You get out.
You're going to have bouncers at your funeral.
Get out.
I went to my friend John's funeral and foolishly didn't bring any tissues with me. I don't know how that happened. And
especially once you get past the age of 35.
I was doing fine until they played the rugby song. I can't even remember what it is. The big rugby song.
It was moving and
God, I was like looking round wildly for anybody that could lend me. My mascara was around my knees. There was snot everywhere. I was going...
The snot is the dangly snot is the problem.
And I thought John would have thought this was hilarious and would have said, why the bloody hell didn't you bring a tissue? Which would have been, you know, a very sensible thing to have done and to have pointed out. But yeah.
But also it's awkward when you're when you know, like at a funeral and they're playing a really great song or something... But everybody's having to be quiet while they're listening to it. And there's nothing more awkward than having to listen to a brilliant, uplifting tune and not being allowed to join in or dance. Yeah. Or it just makes it really all the more sad, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it should surely be a release.
Yeah.
But going back to Lizzie, you know, poor Lizzie and everyone getting cross that she's saying it's 10 years and...
Yeah,
I'm still feeling sad. I think people sometimes think it might be upsetting to go. It's really tricky because I have it occasionally with people who've lost loved ones where you remember the anniversary and you want to go, but you don't. But I sometimes I do it if I know the person very well and I'll just say, you know, thinking of you today. Blah,
yeah.
Blah. But sometimes you think, I don't know this person well enough and I don't know if I'm going to upset them or they're going to go like, well, you're not my, why would you, you know, like are you doing it sort of for attention for yourself? Because you, I don't know, like, God, we're so paranoid, aren't we, as a nation of upsetting people.
But you're never going to forget a date like that. So you're not ever going to remind anybody. They're not going to suddenly go, oh my God, it's that day. You know, they're not.
No.
But it is that fear of, am I making this about me?
Yes, that's what it is. Mm. Yeah, exactly.
Am I doing a Natasha? I'm thinking of you. Aren't I good? Do
also,
I get a batch?
Like competitive.
Yeah.
There's a sort of like,
Yeah.
Who's crying the loudest?
Competitive grieving. Yeah.
I am going to have competitive grieving at my funeral.
I will win. I will set out. I cry at everything. You know I do. I just cried at that email.
I know. And also, you'll be so old.
I will. I'll be like a million. I'll be a little desiccated husk.
I'm slightly looking forward to it.
Your own funeral.
Looking down, chuckling along at the lot of you.
Right. Well, so good. Well, anyway, I'm glad we've planned your funeral, so that's good. Oh, dear.
Anyway, but it's on record. You're allowed to cry. Thanks.
Okay. But thank you very much, yes. Mary. That was a very good email and very thought-provoking.
Very good point as well.
Yes.
Oh, and also, Mary, if you have any tips, like, you know, what is the best thing to do, do you think?
She says that she does like the podcast, even though she has just mildly told us off, but completely justifiedly. She said, it's part of my Sunday post-John routine. I look forward to it as an old-fashioned natter. Yes, I do talk back often with much-needed laughs. Thank you for helping me to feel less alone.
Oh, Mary. Well, here's to Mary and John.
Yes. Now, Manda Champagne, woman with best name in world.
Oh, best name ever.
Says she can remember what the hell is happening here. Do you remember last week they were in the Brookfield kitchen?
Yes.
And it was Ben and Josh talking.
Oh, yes. Have you put the currants in yet?
Oh, no. You have not put the lid on the food mixer. She can remember word for word. Amazing.
Wow.
Why her brain has decided to retain this useless knowledge, I don't know. But anyway, she said, Ben and Josh are attempting to make a roast for lunch for either Ruth's birthday or Mother's Day. They are messing up the batter for Yorkshire puddings because Pip had promised to help them but never showed up, likely because she had swanned off with her boyfriend, Spencer.
Oh, I think I vaguely remember this.
She said, I wonder if James Everett's fandom of Pip has changed after hearing how rude and unreasonable she was during that era of the Archers. Quite intolerable. Oh, we're all rude and unreasonable at that age. Especially
but
when
isn't that strange? Because it feels like it was only about 6 years ago that Pip was with Spencer.
That's because she hasn't matured at all.
Maybe it probably was only 7 or 8 years ago, wasn't it? But for Josh and Ben, they would have been kids.
Yeah.
Oh, it's hard to remember how old everyone is, isn't it?
James Everett says, this is correct. They were making roast dinner for Ruth on Mother's Day. Pip was supposed to be head chef, but woke up late. Therefore, she pulled the short straw and had to do the cleaning up, which took all afternoon.
Oh,
yes. And right. This is this week's.
What the hell is happening?
What the hell is happening here?
Right.
Does every sentence have to have sausages in it? Or ready meals?
Kirsty?
Don't get me wrong. I hope your business is successful. Of course I do. But Tom, people do laugh at you a bit behind your back.
No, they don't.
Yes, they do.
They do. I've done it myself, Mr. One-Track Mind.
I don't have a one-track mind.
Oh, really?
I've got lots of things going on in my life.
Other than work? What exactly?
Well, look, the point is, I'm doing this for our future. One day we'll have our own house and kids.
Well, the future's all very well, but what about now?
Yeah.
Come on, Tom. Sausages, 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 sausages.
The thing is, he's having exactly the same conversation with Natasha now that he was having with Kirsty then.
Exactly.
And he that doesn't was when have he anything... was. Else in
that
his
was
life,
when
he
was becoming Sausage King.
Yeah.
Because that's when his sausage business was taking off, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Or he was focusing on it.
Just before he started nobbing the supermarket woman.
What? Who did he nob? When he was with Kirsty?
Yeah.
Did he have an affair?
Do you mean
sucking up to her, but I don't mean that literally. Do you mean...
No, he did have an affair with her.
Did he? I don't remember that. Was that one?
I'm sure
really?
He did. Yeah.
Oh, people are writing.
Yeah.
Well, that was when they were very much together before the ditching at the aisle.
Yeah.
Go on.
No, I don't know, because I'm the water's closing over my head again, and I shouldn't keep talking because I think I've got this wrong.
You're flooding in Wales.
Yeah. So I'm pulling out. Yes, I don't know. Someone email in and tell us.
Yes, please. But that was Kirsty and Tom in a nightclub.
Yes.
Pre-marriage, but maybe the cracks are starting to show.
Yes.
Everyone's laughing at you, Tom.
Including me.
And also, was that old Tom? I think it was, wasn't it? Even though he does sound very similar to new Tom. But I think pre-marriage was the old Tom actor, wasn't it?
Because he went off to what's it, didn't he? He went off to Canada and then came back. Why do they all go to Canada?
I think that was definitely after the marriage, wasn't it?
Like, yeah,
after
did he come back as a different character? Because normally they go abroad, come back
yes,
as a different
there
person.
There was a break when Tom wasn't in it. Yeah. And then when he came back, he was the real
lovely,
Tony.
Lovely, lovely break without Tom.
Hang on, he is the real Tony Archer's son, isn't he, in real life? Yeah. Something like that.
Yeah.
But then Tony changed as well, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's all very confusing. Anyway, love hearing a bit of vintage Tom and Kirsty.
We think they're clubbing James Everett, and we think that Tom has been being boring about ready meals and Kirsty is telling him. And we think this is before he started flirting or going out with the woman from the food buyer from Underwoods,
right,
who then dumped him, which was like a sort of karma thing.
Oh, okay.
No, that was, sorry, I'm completely wrong. That was Brenda. He was going out with Brenda.
Yes,
and then had the affair and then, yeah.
Oh, I see. So he had the affair while he was with Brenda.
Yes, not when he was with Kirsty.
And then got together with Kirsty.
Yes.
God, it's like living a real life, because it's like my memories of my own family are just like this. because when you go through your cousin's boyfriend and you go, wasn't that? No, that was the other cousin. That was before she met. Oh no, that was on Dad's side. You can't remember anything.
No,
it's dreadful. So we have, not only do we have to remember our own family,
we have to remember a fictional family,
a whole village of them. It's a nightmare. Without any records.
Yes, I know.
Except for James Everett.
It's Mr. Archive. Matt Rodriguez Payne, who he has emailed us as well and said, can I mention, with absolutely no surprise, of the massive entitlement from Lizzie and Lily, firstly being in shock that a worker chooses to earn more money by changing jobs and showing no loyalty to them, secondly with Lily getting Chelsea to snoop on other employees for her. Yes. Well, she did say it's the same money, but obviously they said that at Gay Grables they got membership at the gym and lunches.
And they also probably just get a better boss, someone who's interested in them.
Yeah.
They feel a bit more enthused about the future.
Yeah. I used to work very occasionally at a incredibly, not even a stately home, it's just a big house near where my parents used to live. And that was, it was, just, we were just washing up in these enormous, but washing up the tea things. I was a waitress and a washer-upper, washing up the tea things in this enormous butler's sink in water that you got from an urn and had to stagger over to these butler's sinks with.
No modern convenience.
Tiled floors that smashed things if you even looked at them. The thing that you were holding broke in your hand, and everything was miles away from everywhere else. And there was absolutely, and a grumpy boss. And
being paid
£2.50 an hour or something. And
well, that's the thing, isn't it?
I kind of imagine that's what Lower Loxley's like.
Yeah, they're just complacent and they assume people want the privilege of working there.
The complacency showed when she was recruiting volunteers to be tour guides.
Yes, exactly.
And then forcing them to sort of do a test. Rather than going, thank you so much, we are unbelievably grateful. She's like, I'm not sure if you're what we're looking for. I know that was more Freddie than her.
Unbelievable.
But flipping heck.
Oh, yeah, the entitlement is just, it's so cringy.
Yeah.
And I also did think Denise was very badly behaved.
She really was.
But she is being paid. And to be fair, although I don't like those massive conglomerates that own every independent vet now, but they, if they're saying upsell the customer, you can still do that without doing it fraudulently. You can still say, you can say like, oh, if you're going to buy your joint care, whatever, buy it from us.
Yeah. I think she was sort of projecting her anxiety about fancying Alistair and still being married and working with Paul and all that. I think she's projecting all that onto this Lovell James wanting them to sell more things. And it wasn't anything to do with that, really.
I really liked the dance lesson when suddenly John turned up.
Yeah.
And Alistair had to have an awkward conversation with him.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting, isn't it, that tension? Because...
And it's Alistair's so lovely, clumsy when he said, I think you just look beautiful. You look amazing. I'll leave you to it then, shall I?
In a room. I thought she was going to say to Paul, oh my God, the sexual chemistry between those two. And then he was going to flip out. But obviously he hasn't seen it yet. But it is, I do really enjoy their relationship.
It's the...
And the fact that you could just see Alistair sort of drooling over her in her leotard while she was...
I was trying to work out what Alistair would have been wearing.
I think he would have been wearing jogging bottoms and a T-shirt, don't you?
Yeah, because he does run, doesn't he?
Exactly. That's the thing, I reckon. He's probably in quite decent sort of, you know, manly shape, Lucy.
Yes.
And he has nice warm hands.
Does he?
Oh, yeah, because do you remember when he rubbed...
Yes.
Oh, that was a bit awkward, wasn't it?
Yes.
When
he
rubbed her hands and there was a sound effect like this. That went
somebody
on for ages
needs
with no one talking.
Some Carex. Yes.
Yeah. They sounded really dry. It's a lot
like
of
dry leaves rubbing together on an autumn floor.
Oh, Alistair. No, what's she called? Alistair. Denise has got a special way of saying his name.
Is she?
Alistair, I think she calls him. Your hands are so dry. I mean, warm. They're so warm. Yeah, and he said they're always warm. Which is, I think, is an incredible thing for a person. I have cold hands because I've got that, you know, that Rainer's thing.
Yeah, okay.
Which is an unattractive feature. But for someone, as long as they're not sweaty, for someone to have warm hands must mean they have a warm heart.
Well, no, you're supposed to say warm hands, cold heart.
Is it?
I have to say, he's going to kill me, but anyway, I'm going to say it anyway.
What's Jeff got?
Jeff has got incredibly, he's always warm got hands. Really warm, dry hands. And they're lovely. I don't mean dry like, you know.
Flaky.
No, just not sweaty. Never, never, never sweaty.
And they're not moist.
No, no. And
if
my knee is hurting or my back is hurting, I say, can you put your hand on my back? And it's lovely. It's like a lovely electric blanket. It's just gorgeous.
He can do Reiki then, probably.
Probably. I think he'd rather eat his own foot, but he could. Yes.
I think that is an attractive feature.
It is a very attractive feature.
Whereas warm, moist.
No, that's that damp. No, no. And anyway, they're not warm if they're damp because they're kind of
clammy,
cold.
Yes.
And ugh.
Write in if you have warm, dry hands. We will pay you a special visit to check.
Or I might pimp Jeff out to go and put his hands on listeners. Then we'll all get arrested immediately. Maybe not. Oh, dear. Right. This week's sketch is, I think... Ah, yes. I think it is the fashion show.
Yay!
This week.
Which I do not approve.
Yes, Harriet's favourite fashion show. So we will now cross over to the bull.
Please, people. Hello. Shh. Shush now. Please stop your speaking from when I say shush. Jolene, make them stop.
Shut it.
Ooh, that was very impressive.
Works on Kenton.
Now, listen, you lot. This is a proper dress rehearsal. Pay attention. Models and helpers, listen up.
Thank you, Jolene. Now, as my esteemed colleague just say, this wandering jumble sale is due to happen on an unspecified as yet but quite near date. So we have got to get this right, as otherwise we just end up with a pub full of old clothes and people in too much makeup.
Friday night at the ball, then.
Models, I know you are trying your hardest, but please remember at the very minimum to stand straight with good posture. At moment, you look like old ladies shuffling round Aldi. It's like the devil wears Daymart. Straight backs, chest out. Imagine you are clutching a 2-pound coin between buttocks.
I am. It's the only place I can keep the milk money safe for midday.
Think model. Think Kate Moss. Although there was no need for you to develop actual coke problem, Chelsea.
I just sniff a lot, that's all. Do we have an air makeup schedule yet, Fabrice?
I am work on it. Basically, we need to get people done and on catwalk as soon as possible before all slide off sideways. It is quite hot in here. Jolene, is the catwalk finalised?
They come down here, between the peanuts and the fruit machine, then turn by the gents and end up striking a pose by the box of scampi fries.
What about backstage? Do we have makeup chairs?
Of course we don't. We are in toilet. We have a stepladder, though. So, models, listen up. If you are tall, you sit at the bottom of stepladder and Chelsea do you. If you are shorter, sit on top of stepladder and I do you. And if you are scared of height, sit on Lou.
Blimey, this is a health and safety nightmare. I've got cables everywhere under the bar. Andy Cardboard's put a boot through the cellar trap door. And Emma smeared foundation all over me optics.
Well, this is fashion, Jolene. Live with it.
You're no better, parking your woo-hoo under the dartboard.
I did not want it to get iced up. It is fine. People can squeeze round it. Who is going to be doing the announcements? You know, and here we have Ruth Archer slumping along in Joy Orville's old duffel coat, which she has teamed with a bootleg jean and some of Kate Aldridge's tie-dye rubbish rescue from a tip sort of thing.
I don't know, I hadn't thought of that. I mean, I can, if you like. Possibly through the medium of song.
No! I mean, no, thank you. I think your talent best suited elsewhere. But who could we have, then?
Oh, Christ! Kenton's found his megaphone! I really thought burying the thing at the bottom of the Lillette's dispenser would have stopped him.
Right, that's it. I need to rethink all creative process. If you want me, I will be in disabled toilet. Jolene, I am going to need a Cosmopolitan and some Doritos to aid the thought. Come along, Chelsea.
Bea is coming over shortly. She might help.
Oh, God. In that case, lock the door.
Thank you very much, Fabrice and Harriet being everyone else. And now we're going to end with Matt Rodriguez Payne is delighted with himself because he said, I have actually got a palpable link that is so appropriate. This week's theme is O Fortuna from Carmina Burana by Karl Orff. And the reason is its common connection with all things demonic. It literally means, he's quoting from Classic FM, it literally means, oh, fate, and it is a lament about the inescapable power of fate, a central theme to Roman and Greek mythology, in which fate is a force that rules both gods and mortals. Ooh. And what can be more fateful than the legacy of Rob yes. Titchener, i.e. a final attempt to control things from beyond the grave.
Yes. Mm. Oh, Matt. Yes. That is a good one.
Right, you ready?
I'm quite excited, yes. This sounds like it's going to be a lovely tune.
Yes, it is. Goodbye, everybody.
Goodbye. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you for rating. Thank you for Patreoning. Thank you for subscribing. Thank you for reviewing. Anyone want to do any New Year reviews? Thank you.
And thank you for writing in to us.
Thank
as
you.
Well.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for yes. writing in.
It'd be quite a quick show if you didn't. So, it's
yeah,
good, really.
I really would. But, I mean, we'd have more Friday evening.
We would. Of an evening. You know, we don't do anything with our Friday evenings anyway, so it doesn't really matter.
I just sit in silence being sad.
I've already got my dressing gown on, so I don't care.
Oh, and my face pack. Lovely, Lucy. Yes. And your how's it going under there?
It's all right, actually. It's
gone a bit. Is it warm and clammy?
No, it's gone quite smooth and not sticky anymore. So presumably it's done whatever it's supposed to do. But I can't even remember what it's supposed to do.
Is it like a cover or is it a cream that you're going to wash off?
It's a gel and I'm going to go and wash it off.
Oh, okay. Oh,
it was supposed to be on for 10 minutes. It's been on for 73 minutes and 30 seconds. So let's see what happens.
Golly. It might be a bit raw under there.
Yeah. Oh, ooh, do you know what I did today? I walked the dog on the beach. And there's a part where you go off the beach back to the car park that sort of swirls all the sand up like a little sort of like you're whirling dervishy thing.
Windy Portugal. Yeah.
Yes. And I got a grain of sand between my eyelid and my contact lens.
Oh, no. Oh,
can you imagine what it was like trying to drive back with one eye just weeping continually?
Oh, God,
it hurt.
Could you not have taken that? Was it too dangerous to take the contact lens out?
My eyes are so bad that it would have been, even driving home with one weeping eye would have been better than, yes.
How did you get it out then?
I had to use an eye wash thing. It's happened before once, so I sort of knew what to do. Yes.
Oh, look, we're talking about eyes again.
Yes. Pekingese tree.
Trees.
Yes.
Interesting. Did you see any of them when you were weeping?
No, I didn't. Thank God. I was too busy going, oh,
poor you, Lucy.
I tried to get home.
God, the amount of crying you've done today.
I know. But it was so awful because it was such a lovely walk. It was really sunny and gorgeous.
Gorgeous.
And then I just... I look like I've been punched in one eye now.
Well,
it's
again,
gone all kind of...
fate. That grain of sand didn't have to hit you there.
No.
But it did.
But it did. Right, you ready for a bit of O Fortuna?
Yeah, and thanks for having me on the show. Thanks for listening.
That's all right, Harriet. What?
I was trying to think of an ending.
Okay. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
That's the ending.
Goodbye. Thank you. Goodbye. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.